Hey there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, we hope you enjoy the show.
Wandering DMs live stream. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today we're going to be talking about convention games versus campaign games and the ways that they might be similar and the ways that they're different and things you have to worry about in the different context. So, Paul, this is a pretty well-timed topic, I think, because you and I are getting ready for our annual house convention in about 2 weeks. And you on your blog recently showed some stuff that you did at TotalCon about a month back and had some kind of interesting comments specifically about the campaign versus convention difference there.
Yeah, it's funny when talking to folks like at work or friends who don't really do gaming, I call early spring convention season, not to say that there's really a season for conventions, but that's when I seem to have the most of them. TotalCon in February, the house convention in April. And then I think there was another one. I'm already blanking. That's great. But anyway, I tend to go to a lot of conventions in early spring. And then, of course, we both have home campaigns or have had home campaigns. Right now, the campaign I'm playing in, I'm just the player in. So it's not really my home campaign, I guess. But I've run stuff in the past, and I'm sure we'll run stuff in the future. And you're running for a group regularly, too, right now, right?
I am, and it's kind of which is great because I think that my history's been kind of bipolar on that issue. Is I never went to conventions when I was young or a teenager. I think I was very far away from anywhere that kind of stuff happened. So I think up until 2005, I only ran campaign games and no conventions. And then when I moved from Boston, where you are, to New York, where I am now, I didn't have that opportunity for about 10 years. And then the only thing I was doing was our house convention games from about 05 to, I'd say, last year. So now I actually, for the first time ever, I have both, actually. I do have a campaign that just had its 1 year anniversary last session, as a matter of fact.
Nice.
And kind of going, kind of following your lead a bit and going to more conventions, which I'm discovering are delightful. And so I have been a little bit bipolar about that and learning how to do both at the same time. I feel like I'm still working, getting better at.
They're definitely very different beasts. So somebody posted on my blog just yesterday, just coincidentally, about, convention play. I'd been posting about, the props I had built for a particular, horror game that I ran. I've run twice now, and will run again at the next convention. They're really different things. They're both fun in their own right. They're both kind of role playing, but I would say they're as different as, you know, say playing D&D from Cyberpunk, right? They're it's different games. It's a different experience.
I totally agree. It's I think that for me that's something that wasn't made clear. Like there isn't part of a book anywhere traditionally that says that. And so I think I've at least for the books that I came from, I stumbled into that issue and I totally wasn't aware of the difference for a distressingly long time. And I totally walked right into that pit.
It's interesting, right? There's not a lot of writing about convention play and how and why it's different, right? Like,
yeah.
Even though clearly like the game itself was invented via convention, right? Like sort of the story of Gygax and Arneson meeting at Gen Con.
Yeah. I think some people would say, you know, Arneson's, ongoing games in the Twin Cities era was then translated to something very different for actual convention play. But not everybody needs to agree with that.
but certainly in the early days of D&D, we found snippets of information about how prevalent convention play was, or especially tournaments, right? When you get into like tournaments, that was a big factor, I think, in the development of the game. But yeah, I feel like it's rarely addressed in the text, right? The texts always assume you're going to run a home campaign, which is to say a recurring game with the same players with potentially no foreseen end date in sight.
And I'll say with like one of the traps that I fell into was taking the classic first ever modules like the G series, Studying a Hill Giant Chief, Two Maharers, and on the cover, them being advertised as this was the tournament game at Gen Con 7, or this was the tournament game at Origins 2. And then me taking that at face value and trying to run those games just out of the box as written, and in a 4-hour convention slot, and discovering they are way too big. They're way too big by like a whole order of magnitude. And maybe me being frustrated, maybe the players being a bit frustrated at not even scratching the surface of the content that's there. So, in addition to not clarifying the difference in the books, they were releasing these adventures and saying you could use them in either situation, and you kind of couldn't. And it was kind of frustrating to take these enormous adventures and try to run them in a convention situation, is what I finally learned after a couple of years.
So let me go to I feel like we should address the sort of question or topic that was posed in that comment on my blog, which was sort of, well, why go to conventions? Why are they different? What do they give for you? I think a potential naive perception of them is, well, I'm going to play with a bunch of strangers for 4 hours and then never see them again. What's the point? That's not the game as advertised.
That's a really great question, actually. What would your what is your response to
My
that?
response was, well, first of all, I would separate into what I'm looking for out of a convention for as a player versus as a GM. As a GM, I really enjoy running convention games because it's a very tight constraint to write to. So if I'm writing my own content, I knowing I have exactly 4 hours. If my players aren't familiar with the rules, I'm going to have to teach them. That the pacing is really tight, and I need to know how am I going to get a satisfying, experience out of this. And frankly, that's a whole problem and whole topic in and of itself of sort of how do you get that arc of feeling of, you were in the last 30 minutes of the game and it feels like we're reaching some kind of conclusion. And then so I like those constraints creatively in creating content, and then I like the opportunity to test them, right? The nice thing with conventions, I run the same games over and over again, and I'm constantly tuning that experience, practicing, refining. If my goal is eventual publication, which in some cases it is, it's a great way to sort of test out what works and what doesn't. So I enjoy that a lot as GM, that's sort of the creative side there. Also, maybe I put a little more effort than like with a campaign game. I usually want the minimal effort, especially these days. I like any if I have to spend an hour in prep before my weekly campaign game, I'm like, that's too much. I don't want to do that.
Really?
Yeah,
Wow.
yeah.
Okay.
That's my goal, is to have zero prep. That's my goal.
Let me follow up on that a little bit. So is that did you have like an enormous body of already written stuff for the campaign that just is going to come into play, or?
Yes and no. Okay, so sometimes I write my own stuff. Do I consider that can't prep for the campaign? You could, but I'm not going to sit down and write a dungeon every week for the game, right? I do it rarely. I do it when I feel inspired to write some kind of content. And so oftentimes I don't even think of that as prep for the campaign. Because I also heavily rely on pre-written material. One of my favorite things about running a campaign is sort of taking different inputs, whether it's an adventure I wrote, or a module someone else wrote, or just a neat idea, or a big wilderness map, or whatever, and kind of, I think of myself when I'm running a campaign as like a quilter, right? I'm taking all these scraps and I'm trying to assemble them into one whole thing that makes sense as a whole and is attractive as a whole. So that's what I enjoy about campaign play.
That's great. I mean, I tend to feel a little, I mean, I confess, I tend to feel a little dirty using outside sources, and I really fight to get away from that. I really fight to get comfortable with using the other products of the other 7 billion people on this planet, which are all creative and stuff like that. And I tend to be a little bit monomaniacal about trying to commit to only my own stuff, and that gets me in trouble, frankly.
You know, I don't know. I like taking and modifying other people's stuff. You know, sometimes I'll run an adventure totally as written. Other times I'll be like, I like this map. I'm gonna take this map and I'm gonna completely restock it. Or, you know, I like this idea, but I think that they didn't do a great job around it, so I'm gonna take this nugget of an idea and build an adventure around that.
To cycle back to the question on your blog, it actually strikes me as similar to a question I asked in my academic job. Is I think like a year ago, I asked somebody else, why go to conferences? Why go to academic conferences? I don't see the point of that. And of course, my discipline, math, is tends to be a little bit more single person isolated. But their answer was, well, in order to meet other people that, you know, you might want to be able to collaborate and write a paper with that you wouldn't have met otherwise. And so you're getting your face out there, you're developing a larger network of possible colleagues or collaborators. And from the, you know, from the couple of recent conventions I've gone to, I feel like that's very much happening. There's the games happening, but there's also all the socializing around it. And you're meeting people and you're talking and, you know, maybe you're having a social event at the end of the night and making contacts and swapping Facebook links and email and stuff like that with a lot of really interesting, possibly professional people that I wouldn't have had an opportunity to chat with before that. So my overall network of, you know, and actually for both of us, actually here with the Wandering DMs livecast, actually, like a lot of people have been sharing links around that because we met them at a convention.
I think that's totally true. You know, and that sort of gets into my angle of what do I go for as a player. You know, the first time I ever attend a new convention, anytime I'm going to a new one I've never been to before, I always go as a pure player the first year. I'm like, I'm not going to run anything. I don't want that because I kind of want to feel the get the lay of the land and figure out what's the vibe of this convention and not have like I have to run a game hanging over my head while I evaluate that. But what do, so let me go to the flip side of what do I want out of a convention when I'm a player? Totally what you're talking about. Like, I'm here to meet people, right? I'm here to play with strangers. I know that feels weird, and frankly, half the time it's terrible, right? Like, you can certainly play with some really, really unpleasant people that you never want to play another game with. That happens. If I'm like registering blind for a game, you know, never heard of the DM, never been to this place, don't know who else is going, I kind of assume it's 50-50 whether it's going to be any fun. On the
So a lot
other
of like
hand,
improv comedy, having watched a lot of improv comedy here in New York in the last couple of years, that's it's like that. It has an enormous chance of being terrible.
right. On the other hand, it could be great, right? And I have met some lifelong gaming friends and collaborators through doing that, right? That I am now in constant touch with. And frankly, maybe my home campaign has some people in it that I met through conventions, right? Like that's definitely a thing. So I
So
really enjoy it.
you might say it's going to a convention is kind of like an adventure. It's kind of scary and it's kind of risky, and that's where the greatest sometimes that's where the greatest rewards are, maybe.
Even apart, I would say apart from just individuals of who you're going to meet, I would also say a convention sort of represents the biggest sort of mix and intersection of ideas. Like I might come to a convention and just see a GM do something that I think is really cool and take that home with me and say, oh, that was really interesting. How can I use that? Or play a game I've never played before, right? That's, I think, the best way to discover a new system is to try it at a convention where there's no, you know, stakes of sort of like, well, if this doesn't go well, we're stuck with this for months.
Right. Or things that the players are doing that I haven't seen before. Like even just in your D&D game at TotalCon, there was a player using just classic traditional D&D spells in ways that I had never seen. It was like that is really clever, and I feel like I should have thought about that. So you know, in addition to having a very nice campaign experience with people that you know well, having a you know having the challenge of having new strange players might bring totally new perspectives to your game possibly.
So, Exit Sanity has posted that sometimes a group just wastes a whole session shopping and cavorting in town. And I think that's totally true and wonderful and terrible, right? That's, you know, in a campaign, in a home campaign, you kind of need those kinds of sessions. You need those downtime sessions where we just sort of, you know, don't try to change the world and do, you know, amazing, crazy things. Instead, we're just sort of talking to each other and preparing ourselves mentally for next week.
I will admit that that hasn't ever happened in one of my games to date, and that might be a whole topic on its own.
Interesting.
And I think I've realized recently that I tend to abstract stuff a little bit more than other DMs, and so it's actually possible that in my campaign that might not be a possible thing that ever happens. But common in many places, and maybe we should talk about that actually. Another, like, how detailed do you go into village interactions? That actually might differ between different DMs.
I guess I could also twist that to say, like, there are cases where I've done a session where the party goes to town to, you know, sell and shop and cavort, and the outcome of the cavort is a whole unexpected adventure that we just whip up on the fly,
right?
Because what? You're doing what? Okay.
Right.
You got drunk and you punched out the wrong guy, and then somebody accidentally lit fire to half the town, and right, the whole campaign just goes in a wildly different direction because, okay, I guess that happened.
Well, that's great. That's,
yeah.
Also, you use the damn carousing rules that I don't use.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's wonderful.
I actually had a session like that where it was simply because a player was absent. I think in the previous session, they had gone cavorting. They'd used the carousing tables at the very end of the session, and one player had rolled something really interesting about, like, some kind of interaction with a weird secret cult. Maybe he joins a secret cult, or maybe something. And then the next session, he was absent. He was just sick or away or whatever it was. I can't remember. Couldn't make it. And so I decided to explain that as, I guess that cult abducted him. And then we had a whole adventure that session of try to rescue our friend from this evil cult that I had to invent on the fly. So that was fun.
Well, that's great. You know, actually, that is actually something I wanted to talk about conventions versus campaigns, is you go into a convention game and you have a very focused preset starting point, I'd say, probably pre-generated characters, and you can kind of, you kind of can depend on exactly what player characters are going to be coming into the session. Whereas your campaign game is very dependent on what player's actually going to show up from night to night. And maybe tonight the thief that was important for something didn't show up, or maybe the wizard didn't show up. And so, you know, maybe with campaign play, you need, like, you and the players need to be a little bit more flexible about what's actually possible. Whereas with the convention games, like, here's the PCs, and this adventure is made for these PCs, and they're perfectly... This square peg goes in this square hole perfectly. Is that something sometimes you have problems with in a campaign game that's not part of a convention?
Yeah, I guess. I think it comes back to that sort of, like, how willing am I to just completely go off book and do crazy, crazy stuff?
Right.
With a campaign, there's almost this safety net of, like, it doesn't matter how far I go with this or where it ends, because we're just going to pick up next week.
Right.
Whereas with a convention game, I still like to improvise at a convention game. Don't get me wrong. That's fun. But the constraints are there. Like, I have these 4 hours with these people, and we're never going to see each other again. I mean, we will. We'll go hang out at the bar later. But... yeah, this group of characters in this setting is not just simply not going to happen again.
Right.
Typically.
What do you think is just essentially harder for the DM? Do you think the convention game is fundamentally harder or the campaign game?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think that depends heavily on... Well, what do we mean by harder? Just, like, more taxing or more difficult to
prepare? Yeah. I mean, you look at the campaign game and it feels like you've got an entire world that you're trying to run, and the convention game is probably going to be much smaller. So on that basis, it feels like maybe the convention game should be less taxing, less of a struggle for the DM.
And I actually think it's the opposite. I think the convention game is more taxing because the pacing is so much more important, right? That you have exactly these 4 hours to get to this point, or to get to something that feels satisfying that we can look at afterwards and go, oh, that was a lot of fun. Whereas with a campaign play, you can sort of, you know, you can sort of take your time, right? You don't have to worry about resolving everything immediately.
Right. I agree with that. And I think that the campaign game, you know, the convention games are a much greater challenge for the DM. And I'll say that I come away from conventions and all of a sudden my campaign game's a lot better, actually. Like, I take those lessons and I take that intensity and, you know, work it, and all of a sudden my campaign game actually becomes a little bit more intense and a little bit better paced because of the lessons that I'm taking from that. So David Herron there is mentioning that the expectations are so incredibly different.
Yep.
And certainly I agree with David there. And like, and among them, the major difference is like in a campaign game, you know, there's more of this. You can end on an ambiguous note. There's more of an expectation that you're going to be exploring it, possibly in different directions, mm-hmm. possibly only part of a complex. Whereas in a convention game, like you do need some kind of arc and conclusion.
Yep.
And like, I think in prior live casts, you and I have said that you've got to have some kind of goal to, mm-hmm. to focus the players and kind of be able to touch base with, are you doing well at this goal or not at the end of the session?
I just, yes, I agree with that. You should totally have a goal in your, right. in your convention game. I think that helps a huge amount. I think it helps frankly with all games. But,
and that's one of the lessons that I've tied into my campaign specifically, right?
Yeah.
And again, that's the trap I had with classic modules is you can come to a campaign game and say, okay, we're going to be exploring, studying the Hill Giant Chief. You're going to go in different directions. You're going to find some crazy stuff. This might take several sessions. And if you do that, if you roll out that exact same starting point at a convention, that actually usually turns into a bad game
mm-hmm.
because it feels like, well, yeah, where are we going? The items I'm getting are not going to improve my character next week.
Yep.
I'm not really building a team.
Yep.
And so I've had to learn to create those goals. And I think even just like at TotalCon last month, we probably saw one or two games where people made that mistake of just take traditional module, just say, explore some stuff, and it doesn't make for the best convention game. So you've got to, if you're going to use that, you've got to go in there and mm-hmm. add a specific goal for the convention situation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let me jump back quickly. Sorry, there's a lot of good points there. A lot of good things I want to react to. But let me jump back to David's comments about the expectations are different. And you said something about bringing back the energy from the convention. One thing I notice on the player side, of course, is that they bring a very different energy in as much as I like to say they play to the hilt, right? They know these characters aren't going to live more than 4 hours and they're willing to take much bigger risks as a result.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of fun, I think, if you can harness it.
Yeah, and we had some really great experiences in the last month based on that. You know, and I would point out with one single interesting exception is that a couple people in places do run these ongoing, you know, campaigns where the games are only played at conventions. And like I've stumbled into that at our house game. And when we played in Bill Webb's game at GaryCon last year, people had recurring characters. And yeah, the play was totally different.
Mm.
They were really trying to play it safe. They were really a lot more cautious than some of these, like, we're just going to blow up at the end games.
It's interesting. I know there's a friend of mine who runs games at a lot of the conventions I go to, where what he'll do is he'll run, over the course of the weekend, he'll run however many games he can cram in, 6, 8, 12, whatever fits the time frame, but many sessions of one continuous quasi-mini campaign.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he leaves it up to the players to sort of self-decide if they're just going to drop into one or if they're just going to, you know, spend their whole convention with him, which he has some players who do this, spend their whole convention with him and play the whole campaign. Now, that's interesting, I think, also to compare to what we usually do around my birthday, right, where I invite you and a couple other friends up to my house and we play for a weekend of just a blitz of one mini campaign, right, one extended... Yeah. You once ran the Giants for us, right? And we did as much of the Giants as we could.
Specifically the Fire Giants.
The Fire Giants, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting because I really enjoyed that. That's a ton of fun. To go back to this, I've also dropped in on my other friends' games, and I've played in one out of seven or so, right? And I'm playing, like, the middle one, right? And I have to say, as a player, I was like, this is okay.
Yeah.
But this isn't the best game I've ever played, probably because I've missed the beginning and the end. Right? The GM got to see all that, and the players who were all in got to see all that. But was I there for the most exciting of the six sessions? I guess not, right? I may have just lucked out of not being at one of the climactic sessions.
I can totally see that because... from the DM's angle, it's kind of efficient that I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write one single thing, and that turns into four sessions that I've filled up. But it takes away the focus of I've got to make an interesting arc and climax per session.
Yeah.
So if he's made an interesting climax in the last game, it's easy to take your eye off the ball and forget about making an interesting arc in each session. So I can totally see that.
Yeah. I don't know if that's really what's happening, right? I have not a ton of data points. I played in one of those games once, but
yeah.
And I think you would still be conscious of those sort of codas because like your table gets up and leaves, right? And then they come back and reform, so, and you have some amount of time in between. So I got to assume you're like, whoa, oh, there's a clear break here.
unless you've got a dedicated room to your games the whole time, which happens in some places.
Mm, that's true.
Not common, but sometimes.
Yeah. So my favorite kind of game recently to run at conventions has been horror. I've been running a lot of them, and one of the things I like about that is that the arc is built into the setup and mechanics, irrespective of the content. The arc specifically of what I'm looking for out of a horror game, because I can't even imagine, honestly, playing a campaign, like a Cthulhu campaign. I know some people do it. I don't understand how it works. Because when I sit down to play Cthulhu, I expect that in fairly short order, my character is going to become useless in as much as either he's completely insane or dead. And I like that. I enjoy that. I enjoy that setup of sort of I'm role-playing a character who's fairly normal in the setting, right? And they're going to encounter extraordinary things. And my goal is to see how they react to that. Either do they step up to the challenge and behave heroically and thus probably die horribly, or do they succumb to the challenges and lose their mind and fall into madness?
Let me just riff on that. That's great. Maybe what you need is a campaign that's a match. So two possibilities here. Maybe you need a campaign that's a mashup between Cthulhu and Paranoia, whereby you have a group of clones that gets, where the next clone gets run out every session after having been horribly torn apart.
Right.
Or something like, I don't know if you've seen the movie Endless. Any chance you've seen Endless?
No, I haven't.
It's like this indie kind of Lovecraftian flavored movie that I liked a lot recently, actually, in which there's some kind of timey-wimey thing whereby you keep getting rebooted between sessions. Yeah. Anyway,
interesting.
Just kind of free associating there.
No, that's great. That's great. So that would be interesting. I think that would be an interesting challenge for me to figure out how the heck to adapt horror to a campaign. But my point being, though, that like I really enjoy running them in conventions because, again, I think they fit perfectly in the setting. I've been writing content that is a little more sandboxy because I kind of don't care how much the players get through it. They invent their own arcs of drama through it by their characters discovering terrible things and them reacting to that badly.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I noticed at HelgaCon coming up, you're actually not running any D&D, right?
It's true. That's a bit of an accident, but that's what happened.
So how many what proportion of games are horror there that you're doing?
That's hard to say. Okay.
Right.
Just one, really. But the two of the other games I'm running also have elements of horror in them. I will be bringing the insanity cards to at least one of those other games. That's not their goal. They're not overarchingly, meant to be this game. Not like my Cthulhu games where it's like, I'm very direct with my players at those games. I sit down at the table. I say, my goal as GM in this game is to make sure that each of you is either insane or dead by the end. I just lay that out on the table, so just want to set the tone. I never succeed at that. I've yet to get great. Each and every one of them completely insane and dead, but that's my goal.
Great. And just in case anybody, so Paul just mentioned the insanity cards, which is his mechanic for running insanity in any kind of game, actually, horror, D&D, whatever. I've got it listed in the OED rules as the preferred mechanic for insanity, and that is available on GameCrafters. If you go to GameCrafters.com and look for insanity cards, it's a great product. And everybody that ever plays with it gets a copy.
Thanks for the plug.
It's all true. It's all totally true.
I really enjoy using them. So the funny thing is, one of the games I'm running at this upcoming convention is Warhammer Fantasy RPG, the latest 4th edition that came out, in which they removed their insanity rules. And I was like, great, I guess okay. I know what I'm doing.
So. That's great. Let me ask about like how much content fits into a 4-hour convention slot. So again, I've been struggling, and I think getting better at taking classic modules and going, oh, you can't do that in 4 hours. That's ridiculous.
Right. Sorry. Go on.
Go ahead.
Okay. So we're gonna completely set horror to the side now, because fitting D&D into a convention or any like just sort of standard fantasy is a really interesting and thorny problem to solve, I think. Right. And what I've come to the conclusion is, I still want some of those moments of improv in those games. But I also very much believe that you have to have a good quantity of content, more than what you think that the players could get through.
Okay.
Right, okay. Because otherwise it will feel very railroady, right? If you have exactly the number of rooms that they can get through, then... They're gonna get through those rooms and have seen everything and feel like that they never had any choices to make.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting. And so I guess sub question part A was do you make like a branching dungeon with a whole lot of possible different directions, or do you make a linear dungeon where you're definitely gonna go A B C D E F in a particular order? So it sounds like you're recommending the branching.
Yeah, well, because I'll give you the perfect example of the previous, which is the A series. If you go through the A series of modules and you play them with the tournament filter on, and you play just the tournament stuff, it is very much a linear progression, right? There is zero choice for the players. They go from room A to B to C to D. And my experience having running those is that while they're fun, there's interesting rooms to encounter, that they're not nearly as fun as the games where the players feel like they have more freeform choice to influence their destinies.
Well, that's a really interesting observation. So I think that you have more experience with that than I do. And the number of examples that I've seen about tournament stuff, like A series, like when we played in the D&D tournament at Gen Con, like 04 or something like that, I feel like the tournament we were in at Gary Con last time were like, they're all railroaded. They're all linear. And so I get the impression that just from that tournaments are, you know, by default always made linear.
I think that's true. And I think that's because it's easier.
Yeah.
Not that it's better. It's definitely not better. I think it's just easier to write that way.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. So interesting. You're pretty committed to having more spaces and more content than any particular group can ever get to.
The contrasting point I would give is, if you look on my blog fairly recently, I posted the adventure I ran at TotalCon called Gloomwood Falls. This is a one-page dungeon that I lifted out of my campaign from many years ago and have run time and time again at conventions. So it's well-tested, well-played, and been tuned a lot. It's got a lot of different areas. I've never played it. I've never seen any group see everything. In fact, the last time I ran it, there's a whole little section of like 4 or 5 rooms where there's a lich. And having run this now at least half a dozen times at different conventions, the last run is the first time I've had a group actually encounter the lich.
With very interesting consequences.
Yeah. But on the other hand, that group didn't encounter the purple worm, which is often one of the most successful encounters in that thing. People always often come away from that game going, oh, that purple worm encounter was great.
Okay.
Yep.
And that's the one where like you have like one end in one room and one end in another room. Is that what you're thinking of?
The purple worm is so massive, it literally fills some of the passageways that connect rooms. And so, you end up kind of fighting both ends of the worm.
Great. So that having been said, so granted that you like to see a branching series of possibilities, one question that I might ask, whether you're making a linear game or a multi-branching game, is how many encounters do you expect the players to run into in 4 hours? And that could either be, well, that's just the entirety of my linear game, or that could be like, how big do I need to make the different branches maybe?
Yeah. It's a tough question, because the more time you have, the fuzzier I think the number gets. If we look at, say, my boss fight for breakfast games, which are pretty linear, I have 2 hours. I can tell you exactly, like, 3 to 5 rooms is what 3 to 5. Yeah. 3 to 5 rooms is what I want. And really, I try to tie all those rooms together into one crazy big encounter. Right.
Right.
One sort of, you know, it's really though, it's kind of 3 encounters. Really often, it's usually the complexity level of 3 encounters is usually what I'm going for in boss fight.
Okay, in 2 hours. Now, that unlike many of our games, it's battle map, it's miniatures, it's an all-round action sequence.
Admittedly, so I haven't always run it that way. I have run it without miniatures and then more free-flowing, just sort of showing handout drawings and asking, where are you?
Okay, all right. Interesting.
Yeah, I've done it the other way as well, which works.
Okay, interesting. So I think in the games that I've been a player recently, I don't know if you've noticed, if you're ever a player sitting next to me, I'm keeping a tally count on my paper of how many encounters or rooms we get to actually to keep statistics on that. And I think in the games that we tend to play in, I tend to find about a dozen these days in 4 hours. So it tends to be about, I tend to be seeing around 3 encounters per hour is what I'm seeing in the kind of loose-ish D&D or DCC games.
David asked an excellent question, which I think we should both try to answer. When he asks, what do you mean by the complexity level of 3 encounters? You're saying a dozen encounters, and I want to ask you, well, what is the complexity level of those encounters? So let me give you a range. A low complexity encounter is you fight 6 goblins, right? Mm-hmm. I think we all know how to run that encounter. That's pretty straightforward. On the other hand, I've had a boss fight for breakfast game. In the end room, the room is bowl-shaped, in the center of which is a huge pool. Living in the pool is a giant with the head of a hippopotamus who's surrounded by an anti-magic field. He has some cultists around him that worship him. There are also, additionally, some were-tigers in the room that you have to contend with. The room has multiple physical features that make it interesting and unusual to deal with. Steps in one place and stuff hanging from the ceiling and a trap door, etc. So that I would consider a high-complexity encounter. But high-complexity meaning the number of different enemies and the number of different sort of physical features of the room itself.
Right. That's definitely the high end. And for me, like I'm counting like number one, we fought 6 goblins. Number two, we had a negotiation with the boss of the Thieves Guild. Number three, we were searching a room carefully for traps to make sure we didn't blow up. Four, we tried to fight the champion boxer or something like that. And so it's interesting because so right before this live cast, I looked up the old TSR product. It's marked Module C6. I think the title is The Official RPGA Tournament Handbook.
We have an image for our
video. Yeah, there you go. There it is. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Right there. 1987? Right, 1987 is what that is. And so, you know, that has a couple of adventures, actually. And then it's got a half-dozen-page section at the end of the existing RPGA recommendations for tournaments for 4-hour convention slots. And they have a bunch of different, you know, encounter types. They have like a dozen encounter types. So it's a combat, or it's a guard dog, or it's a trap, or it's a negotiation, or something like that. And their recommendation in 4 hours is 6 to 8 encounters. It says 6 to 8 encounters in 4 hours, counting combat as 1.5 encounters.
That's interesting.
And then also having between 0 and 3 uneventful encounters. So I'm not entirely sure. I can't figure out what an uneventful encounter would be. Right.
Well, let me ask you this, because we've been throwing around number of rooms versus number of encounters. Do you have like empty mood only rooms? Assuming it's like a standard dungeon crawl,
I wouldn't count those as an encounter.
Right. Me either. I suspect my gut tells me that's what they're talking about. Here's a room with some stuff in it that is evocative of the setting, but there's nothing for you to do. Move on.
That's fair, and that probably lines up. Like, actually, if you look at the A-series stats, actually, they're very consistent, is that they have 12 rooms, they have 9 of those rooms with something significant to slow you down. Mm-hmm. And it's of those 9, it's 5 monsters and 4 traps. So that actually lines up pretty well. So you have 9 actual content rooms and you have 3 basically empty rooms for a total of 12 rooms. And that happens in both halves of A1 part A, A1 part B, et cetera, like both halves of each module. So you're probably right. That's probably what they're thinking about. Now, here's a quiz question. So yeah. Granted, the RPGA recommendation is 6 to 8 actual encounters, let's say, in 4 hours. They have a maximum page count size, right? We recommend that you don't go over this many pages in your manuscript. And Paul, I would like you to guess what the upper bound is for. Now, it's double spaced for what it's worth, but how many pages is the most that they would accept for 6 to 8 encounters?
It's going to be higher than I'm comfortable with, so let me buffer that. I'm going to say 20.
45 pages. 45, they think they're going to hand a tournament session to somebody, and it's 45 pages, and you're going to be able to parse that content and run it competently on the spot. Can you believe that?
Jeez. Man. How many do you want, Dan? What's Dan's recommendation?
6. I think I want 6, frankly.
Okay.
Like 10 starts to become ridiculous. It depends on how dense the text is, but frankly, you know, I want like 6 digest-sized pages, frankly, is what I want. Now, it's interesting because we know people...
Can I just be even crazier and say, like, I want 2 or 3?
Great. I respect that. Yeah. And you know what? 2 years ago, I would have pushed back against that. Honestly, I would have said, no, too little. And now, partly because of my campaign game, I see, yeah, the more text, the more it slows down the pacing, mm-hmm. and the harder it is for the DM to be flexible about it. So now I'm going to respect that and say, yeah, that might be quite legitimate.
Yeah, if I could get away with 1, that's my absolute favorite. And that's, if you look at Gloomwood Falls, that's what it is, 1 page.
One starts to grind me a bit, but I see why that's useful. It works.
Yeah,
it works. Yeah.
So I'll give you an extra 2 or 3 pages.
So you and I both know people that have that widely vary on that. How much content do I prepare? And so mm-hmm. our very good friend BJ obviously is probably my example of like high end of extravagant spectacle at a convention, and he makes custom miniatures and he makes custom terrain and elaborate plots, and he probably takes several months to put all that together for even one game. And then, you know, you and I might like 6 to 8 pages. I saw Mike Curtis at TotalCon run a game with 2 pages of just handwritten notes. And then we also know some old school people like, I guess, Tim Kask and Frank Metzer, who just improvise the entire thing. Yep. And they come in with 0 pages and say to players, each player give me 2 words, and I'm going to construct an adventure entirely on the fly, entirely improvised.
That is what they've been running recently. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The vast, vast difference in protocols for what some people do.
Here's the funny thing. For written material, actually, I feel like I want a little more for conventions, or at least not just a little more, but a little more refinement, a little more practice. I mean, certainly I go way off the deep end in building props for my horror games. Yeah. So I put a lot of effort into that. Whereas, when I talk about my campaign games, my goal really is zero prep. I want as little as I can possibly get away with. Just because I feel like it's a different thing, right? What I've said is I think like when I get into like long-term campaign with, we're just, we don't know where this is going to go. We're just going to play until we're so sick of it. We don't want to play anymore. I want to come to the table feeling like I'm playing too. Right. Okay. So I want to feel like, not like at a convention game, I guess I feel a little bit more like I'm performing.
Yeah.
Whereas home campaign, I feel like I'm just another player with a slightly different role.
I might have to process that, actually. That's one I might have to process a bit, actually. I definitely feel like I'm performing as the campaign DM, and I like that. And I'm kind of, I'm kind of a failed actor a little bit, and I'm looking for stage time.
I mean, there's definitely a performative aspect to role playing, no matter how you take it, right? Even if when I'm showing up as the player, I'm kind of performing to the rest of the group, right? Like, so it's never zero performance.
True, true. I mean, you're right, but
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. There you have it.
It's certainly more intense interaction when you're DM and you're managing a table full of players and the rules and the monsters and the scenario behind the scenes. And so there's certainly more stuff happening in my head when I'm DM than when I'm player.
Yeah, for sure. But again, like my favorite sessions, the ones that stand out to me the most are those ones like the one I described where my players spent a whole session trying to free their friend from the cult that had abducted him. And I literally had nothing. I had to, like, let me dig through some maps and see if I have a map that looks vaguely like a cult headquarters. What's going on with this weird cult? They had one clue, which I had dropped the previous session without thinking about it, in that he was last seen with a man in a purple turban. And thus we introduced the Silk Guild to our game, which was wonderful.
That really sounds like an amazing game, Paul. That really does. I mean, I tip my hat to you for being able to pull off something so seemingly elaborate, entirely improvised. Because if I was going into that kind of situation, I would really be sweating bullets and be very unhappy, frankly. That sounds amazing.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I was sweating bullets. And what I'm talking about here is the ideal, a thing that happened once over the course of a 2-year campaign, right? I mean, no, we had some lesser versions of that. Probably some of my players will point out the crazy vampire hunt they went on. When those things happen, those are my favorite moments. And I want to do whatever I can to promote them happening more frequently.
My tradition is that I over-prepare and that I'm a little Asperger's-y. And I am trying to get more and more flexible about less prep. And the lessons that I've had lately about the outdoor spoliation game and the convention games is I'm certainly fighting in a direction of less prep. I think I probably over-prepare is what I do.
You know, here's a funny anecdote for you. When I was in college, we had a friend who was GMing who was very good at improvising stuff on the fly. And yet was also prone to over-prepare.
Yeah.
So he would write and write and write content. And we as players delighted in overturning that apple cart. Like he would present a huge amount of stuff and we would look for a way to go the other direction. Oh, that's great. You invented all this stuff, but we're going to go over here instead. That probably drove him nuts.
That's delightfully sinister.
Yeah. I mean, maybe...
I really appreciate that.
As young college students, maybe we were a little more free to be that mean-spirited. but it's funny. I don't know. Does he still over-prepare? Probably.